Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
Ah, how about
Swangles in Fort Lauderdale?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on iconic Rockfin Odyssey band.video, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate your amazing and continued success. If you are interested in following my insanity on Twitter, you can do so at Macroaggressions. The website is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can check out my other shows, The Union of the Unwanted, which we do twice a month, with Ricky Verandas from The Ripple Effect, Midnight Mike from OBDM, and Sam Tripoli from Tinfoil Hat, among other shows. And also I do Day Zero with Chris Matthew, Corey Hughes, and X-Cube 420. That show gets a little bit off the rails. I will warn you in advance. Hey, I mentioned Iconic. This show has been on Iconic since we started. We're so thankful to the Ikes, but they wanted me to pass along a message to you. If you are interested in checking out what they're doing on Iconic, there's a link in the show notes that'll give you 10 free days. You can try it out before you buy it. See what you think. They're doing amazing stuff. They're making original content, weekly shows, movies, documentary series. Obviously, all of David Icke's stuff is on there. And a huge segment on health and wellness, which I was a little bit surprised at how robust that selection is. So if you're interested, you can click on the link and just try it out for 10 days and see what you think. We love the Ikes. We appreciate their amazing support. So check it out. See what you think. Look, I don't know how else to say this. And I will continue to say this until I feel that every one of the listeners is ready for what is coming, whatever that may be. But I'll tell you what, I've got a sponsor, My Patriot Supply. They were nice enough to build a landing page for us called preparewithmacroaggressions.com. You can check that out. Through that website, you can get special pricing on 4 week supply of food, on 3 month supply of food. They have water purification, air filtration, camping gear, survival coffee, whatever that is. Still trying to figure out what survival coffee is. Probably not Starbucks, I would imagine that. I do know that it lasts for 25 years. So if the apocalypse lasts for 25 years, at least you will be fully caffeinated for it. But seriously, if you're not getting prepared through my sponsor, preparewithmacroaggressions.com, just get prepared however you can. Start thinking about this. Start getting a little bit of extra food every time you go to the store. Buy some gold and silver. Get your money out of the banking system. Please, please, please. I will feel much better knowing that the rest of you are taken care of. I don't know if we can do much for the cyber attack that's coming. Maybe, I guess, be aware of it. But for the other stuff, you're going to have to, you're going to need food. You're going to need water. Start thinking about that well in advance while it's still available, because those ships in China, they ain't going anywhere. And that's probably a bad sign. Hey, also to our other sponsor, or one of our other sponsors, Chemical Free Body. Get your body ready for what's coming too. If 2022 is the year that you finally take back control of your health, then go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro and do yourself a favor. Watch this 2-minute video that I made that's insane of what the results look like after after Tony puts you through the detox in a box program that that they put me on. It is green 85 drinks, 4 different types of pills, and it leaned me out in a way that is, well, it's on video. You can see my shorts still don't fit anymore. I had to get new clothes because of it. So if you are so inclined, go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro, and on your way out, save yourself a little bit of extra cash by using the promo code macro as well. Well, in the truth community, we all have to stick together. One of my favorite people in the truth community is our guest. He is the host of the new show, Rebunked, the former host of Truthzilla, Scott Armstrong. What are you doing, Scott? It's so good to see you. I'm so excited for all of your new show, your new adventures. I'm just excited for you. How are you?
Oh, man, Charlie, I'm doing excellent. Thank you so much for having me on. Like, this is quite the honor. You know, I took my snake venom antidote this morning. I'm ready to rock and roll.
There you go. Well, we're going to be good. I mean, we're going to need it. We're living in the craziest times. You guys, so I always loved going on Truthzilla. You guys were not just, you weren't just talking about this stuff. I have a PhD in complaining about all the things that are going on here, but you would always take it to the next level. You were bullhorning people at the track and field meet. You were all every time the news cameras were there, you would be in the background bullhorning them and really giving them the business, which of course I love. How'd you get into the activism part of this?
Oh man, you know, well, this whole thing, you know, I've been saying a lot lately, like this, the whole events that started in March of 2020 up until just now, you know, like this just activated so many people. You know, I don't think that they really anticipated that, really. I mean, that maybe wasn't part of their original calculation, was how much it would awaken and activate so many people. Like, man, I was just living just a, you know, humdrum life before. And then like, it was very early on, like within the first month, or, you know, by like April, you know, Ed and I were like, dude, we got to do something. Like, our original idea was like, make t-shirts, right? Like, let's make t-shirts. And his idea was COVID-1984. It's like the most novel idea. I'm like, yo, that's a great idea. Like, before that was like, you know, everywhere, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like the parallel thought idea. Everyone came up with the same idea at the same time. So that was the original idea. And then, you know, I can't remember which one of us suggested. It's like, well, let's just do a podcast, you know, because we Sam Tripoli was kind of the main one that we'd both listened to a lot. Tinfoil Hat. I think that was before you started, right around the time you started Macroaggressions too. Yeah. But I've been following your work forever, you know, before then. And it's just like, gosh, let's just start a podcast. But of course there's that self doubt. Like, no, there's already too many podcasts out there and blah, blah, blah. Right. But, you know, so we ended up just doing it. And, then, you know, we started getting traction very early on. Like, very early on, it was like, you know, Ricky had us on the Union of the Unwanted, and that just kind of like exponential growth from there. And then looking at our community, you know, I'm out here in Oregon, Eugene, Oregon, which is just like, you know, oof, it's dark. It's a dark place. And especially back then, it was really, really demoralizing just constantly. But actually had it was Adam from Denver Gets Red Pilled, back before he started his podcast. He reached out and said, hey, they've got this group going on up here in Portland called Freedom Cells. And before I even knew about Derek Burrows or anybody, you know, in that realm. So Freedom Cells, started by Derek Burrows, John Bush, kind of a network of, you know, encouraging people to come together, built around like, you know, principles of like agorism, you know, parallel structures, counter economics, all that stuff. So we went up to Portland to attend one of those meetups and just blown away. Like, oh my gosh. Like, and this would have been like maybe summer of 2020. We're just like, man, this is it right here. You know, like we need to build something like that in Eugene. So we started our own, started putting together meetups and starting to put together like, you know, like I don't know. It just felt like that was the solution. You know, whatever it is they're going to throw at us, we needed to kind of like, you know, circle the wagons, kind of like try to prepare for it. I mean, at the time we were expecting just who knows? I mean, you know, like just like, who knows where this was going to go. So that kind of led to having like this strong little community here that really started going to the rallies and the protests. And, you know, I don't know, I got a bullhorn and off of Amazon, and I'm just like, all right. And started doing that. And yeah, man, I don't know. I just felt like that's where I really connected, was just being out there. And yeah, I don't know, just like the organizing piece, like organizing people and communities and stuff. Like I really found a real knack for that. And then like we did this whole like festival and last summer, like up near Portland, it was like speakers like Dr. Paul Thomas and Tim James was there. Shout out Tim James. He was a speaker. We had like live music and just a big camp out festival. It was pretty cool. So yeah, man, I don't know. Like that's been a huge part of this, you know? And like I said, I didn't even know that I had any of this stuff within me. You know what I mean? Like this is kind of like spurned out of all this nonsense. So yeah, it's crazy.
I got to tell you my quick Derek Rose story. I don't know Derek, but I have met him once, but I wouldn't say I really knew him. I was at an Acapulco and I had just got done with the DMT ceremony.
Oh, nice.
And my partner for the DMT ceremony was Johnny Dollar, this crypto anarchist artist guy. And we got done with the session. It was really heavy duty, man. It was a real emotional roller coaster. I didn't know Johnny before this, but we like bonded immediately. And we got done with it. And he's like, oh, he was telling me about all his artwork. And so he's like, well, we'll go over to my room. I've got this big hardcover book of it, and we'll take a look. And I was cool. So we got in the elevator, right? And we hit the button. And then right then Derek Bros got in. He's like, hey guys, how you doing? And it's like midnight, right? And Johnny goes, We just got done with the DMT ceremony. And Derek's like, oh my God. Okay, so at tonight you might wake up in the middle of the night. That's totally normal. If you do that, you know, then just get some water and try and get yourself, you know, figured out and go back to sleep, but you'll be fine. And I'm so excited for you guys. And he's like, and then like the door opens, it was his floor. He's like, all right, bye. And he walks out. And I was like, damn, that was really funny. He was super nice to us, you know, but like, I was still like, I think I still had one foot in the other dimension. So I was, but Derek has been great about activism, real activism. He's got a hardcore story, a real history about what he's gone through. And maybe one day I'll connect up with him because I'd love to talk to him about all his stuff, everything that he's been doing. And you guys, the idea of doing that event that you guys put on last year, how did that all come about? Because I remember hearing about that going, ooh, I'd really love to go. Yeah. And I couldn't make it. And I was like, well, I'll get the scoop from everyone that was there. But how did that come about? What was the origins of that?
So I attended a festival up in Seattle called Squatch Fest. So Squatch Fest is like this recurring, it's a bi-yearly, they do one in the fall. It's the, what do they do? The fall harvest one, and then they do a spring awakening one. And so I went to the spring one back in 2021, and they would have been like in March, I believe. And that was super amazing. That was just super inspiring. They had all these speakers and events, and it was just like all these people and, you know, all these listeners that had listened to Truthzilla, like this one gal, shout out to Catherine, if she's listening. They're huge supporters of the show and everything. But like, I was helping gather firewood, you know, I was driving this tractor, but it's like, we were pulling this length of like fencing, dragging all this firewood behind. And I was like yelling at somebody behind me. And this gal runs up to me. She's like, are you Scott from Truthzilla? I'm like, yeah. She's like, oh, I recognize your voice. I'd never seen your show, but I recognize your voice. And that was
a way.
Yeah. And so just meeting people. Anyway, it was just like this really amazing experience, you know, especially after the demoralization and just the awfulness and just this, like we were all out in the woods and it was like COVID didn't even exist. Like none of the last couple of years had even existed. And we're all come together, and it was just such a powerful experience, you know. Like I've been to campouts and festivals and stuff like that, but this was unique because, you know, obviously everybody was very like-minded, but you know, it was just like this reprieve from all of the insanity. And it was such a powerful experience that I was like, man, we have to recreate something like that down in our area, you know? And so that's really what it was. And we threw it together real quick. Like there was a great group of people that came together to help, and we built a stage, like out of pallets, like, Amber and John, our friends, the Gleaners, brought down this whole trailer full of pallets that we disassembled and built a stage out of it. And Yeah. And then Mark, the property owner, shout out to Mark, just, you know, just clearing out all the space and these, all these fields, because it's on his property. He's got this massive, like, property that kind of rolls down like several levels, and it's just like in the forest, and it's way cool. So yeah. And I think that was, it was a really, really inspiring event. It was a lot of work, but, yeah, you know, and it sounds like they're going to do it again this year. I know they're going to do it again this year. And so we called it Manifest, right? And I think they're doing it again this year. I won't be here for it, unfortunately, but it sounds like they're going to be doing it anyways.
But you're going to Float Fest.
I am going to Float Fest. Yes. And actually, I just had Aaron and Kingsley on. I think that episode is going to come out tomorrow. So yeah.
Shout out to Aaron and Kingsley. Aaron. We love them. They've been on the Union a bunch of times. I've never had them on the show, but that's going to change because it's just a scheduling situation. But I think that what they're doing is phenomenal. Heard about them initially through Jeff Berwick and Josh Sigurdsson, and found out they were living in Vegas, which is where I had lived for a decade. So, excited to connect with them at some point. I'd love to go to Float Fest. I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it this year. I couldn't make it last year, but something tells me that that's going to be around for a while, because I've heard nothing but good things about that, everyone's experience from last year.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic. Just all these folks that, you know, I've had a chance to interview or kind of peripherally get to know, to be able to meet them and hang out. Like, I just can't even imagine. It's going to be fantastic. You know.
So Richard Gage, you just had him on. Yeah. Yes.
I got some cool Richard Gage stories. Like, this is amazing. So I had Richard Gage on, and we got to chatting, and I've heard him on other interviews, and I don't know. Are you familiar with like his whole story about like what happened?
Yeah. Well, when you tell your Richard Gage story, and then I'll tell mine. For those that don't know, he was the founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. He's recently, within the last 18 months or so, has left that organization and is doing his own thing. But he was one of the, you know, buttoned up guys. He's an architect himself, and was building schools or designing schools, and wound up hearing about this 9/11 situation and thought it sounded preposterous, and decided to go to a meeting, heard a guy on the radio, and decided to go see him live speak, and was mesmerized by this, and has devoted his life now to figuring this whole thing out. Richard, well, I'll tell you real quick. Richard and I went to Benny Will's wedding.
That's right.
Benny Will's from Joy Camp had a wedding in Spokane, and I didn't know anyone there. I went all by myself. My wife couldn't go. I just said, I'm going to go and support him, and, you know, whatever. So I go to the wedding, and at the, you know, and there's tables for dinner. I get seated right next to Richard Gage. I go, you're in my book. He goes, oh, that's cool. I said, no, I don't think you understand. I have a chapter that's titled Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And he's like, really? So poor guy, I must have talked his ear off. I had a couple beers, and I, you know, and they were, he and his wife were so nice. They sat there. We interacted, and I wound up inviting them to Anarchapulco, where he wound up speaking, and we did it all again there once he got to Mexico. But I think he's an example of one of those really good guys that's a straight laced, you know, he's a suit who figured it out. And when the suits figured out, they tend to incorporate their suit-like thinking. Let's get to the bottom. Okay, well, let's fix this problem. This is a problem. Let's start talking about it. Boom, boom, boom. So I love Richard Gage. I think.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And of course, when I asked that, I knew you knew who he was, but I was talking more like what happened at Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Like,
I don't know about that.
This is the insane part. So our mutual friend, Matthew Raymer from Content Safe, put us in touch, and I sent him a message on Telegram initially, just gushing, you know, saying like, oh my gosh, you know, I've been a supporter and like, you know, follower of your work for so long. Like, thank you so much for all that you're doing. I love Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And then I was doing some more looking into it and found out that he'd actually left, and not on good terms either. Yeah. And I was like, oh shit. So I had to delete that message and go back, and like, then I sent him an email, and then I kind of bridged that gap. But yeah. So but apparently, and this is his own words, you know, he's open about it. If you go to his new website, richardgage911.org, he has a statement up there that talks about it. But basically the gist of it was, is that in an interview, he basically said something about how COVID was, you know, a psyop and a deep state agenda. And they took issue with that. They said that you can't, as the public facing spokesperson of this organization, you can't be out there saying stuff like that because it detracts from the message of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And they voted him out. The board voted him out of his own organization. And just like, what? That is insane. That is insane. Like, you know, to a certain degree, I guess I understand where they're coming from, but at the same time, that's just super suspicious. Like, if you can't, like, to me, it seems like if you're on the board of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, that means that you've jumped through over some hurdles and you've kind of established and proven yourself to be a pretty awake individual.
You would think, yeah. You would think you would be able to see a government-funded psychological operation when you saw one, considering you're focusing on one of the biggest ones of all times, 9/11. So, and a lot of fingerprints from 9/11 are on COVID as well, in terms of role playing exercises and things like that. You would think that they would make that connection. Maybe they'll figure it out the way the rest of the general public is starting to figure it out, and they'll have some apologies to make to Mr. Richard Gage at some point. He's such a nice guy, though.
Fascinating, yeah.
And I did hear that, but I didn't know if there was. I didn't know if there's anything more to it. There's got to be something more to it than this, right? This sounds a little flimsy as a reason to get rid of him.
I know. And I asked him, like, well, so so the story continues. I love this. So I had him on the show, and, I've heard him talk before I get there, like, I've been really wanting to shout out the fact that, like, and I didn't even know about this. I feel like I'm pretty plugged into the truth community, kind of like, you know, as many of us are. And I didn't even know about his dismissal from AE 9/11 Truth. But second of all, that now he is just running and gunning on his own. He's got this awesome project going. Like, everybody out there should go subscribe to his podcast. It's called Richard Gage 911 Unleashed. It's a fantastic show. And, I had no idea about it. I've been binging on it, ever since I had him on. Mm-hmm. But then he's got this whole, his website, richardgage911.org. So he's got this whole thing, and he's, the way he describes it as being unleashed, right? So now he's no longer tied down to having to focus on World Trade Center 7 or the collapse of the Twin Towers, like, which was the focus of AE 9/11 Truth. Now he can look at it in a more, broad sense and make larger connections that he wasn't able to make before. So I take it that he's excited about the new direction, but also it's like starting over, and him and I kind of, I totally felt where he was coming from. Cause this was like, right when I was starting this new show after having left Truthzilla, like this whole thing that I built up from the ground up and like was such a part of my identity. And then now all of a sudden that's not there anymore. Now we're having to start over. So I totally empathize with him on that,
Yeah. Powerful. Well, I'm on a subscriber to his newsletters. Yeah. So I get the newsletters and all of that. And that's it's a great opportunity for him. It's a great opportunity for you. It is a little scary when you step off on your own. It's like leaving the band and starting your solo career. It's like, is anyone going to love me or do they just love the band? And it's like, there's room for people to love them both. There's no reason you can't also support Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. I mean, they might not be handling Richard the right way, but the work still stands. I mean, that's great work. I like to see Richard's solo career now. That'll be great to see that. And because 9/11 is still not figured out in the heads of most normies. And I think that if you come to understand that, then a lot of what we're currently experiencing will make sense. You had Matt Raymer on, I saw.
Yeah, Matt Raymer on recently. Yep.
He's great, man. You guys and Grimerica and Matt and Steve Poikonen are pretty much like on speed dial for Union of the Unwanted. It's like when the show is when it's Monday after early afternoon and the show's gonna start in a couple hours, and Ricky's like, well, who are we gonna, who are we talking to? I'm like, the crew, And so then boom, all of a sudden I see Grimerica, I see you. Matt Raymer has been tackling this technology side of things, the censorship side of things with his company Content Safe. Mm-hmm. And what'd you guys get into on that episode? Because I think he's doing, his services are obviously very much in need right now. And he's been able to protect a bunch of people from experiencing this deplatforming and censorship. What'd you guys get into?
Yeah, we talked a lot about that. You know, he's actually also in Southeast Asia. So he kind of gave us a really good perspective about what life is like down there, you know, and it sounds like, again, the solution for him is just like, just know your neighbors and build community. You know, it's pretty cool. But in terms of like the censorship thing, like I got a lot of respect for Content Safe. Like I partnered with them since the beginning. You know, we were customers, and now I kind of like advocate for him, like, you know what I mean? And so I'm trying to help other content creators like move over to Content Safe. So anybody that's content creator out there, like, not only will Content Safe like back up all your content, you know, so, which is nice, the redundancy of having your videos stored somewhere. You know, I've heard so many cases of people who only were on YouTube, like, you know, who got taken down in 2017 before it was like well known that that was like a huge thing, and just years and years, hundreds of videos gone, and there's like nothing you can do about it, you know?
Right.
So the redundancy is a huge piece, like having that backed up and saved in multiple locations, you know, that's a big part of this. But to me, the most useful thing that Content Safe does, and he's, it's just amazing. So like, as a content creator, I don't have time to sit there all day and upload to all these platforms, you know, and it's like, you know, YouTube, Rumble, Rockfin. I don't have to load to YouTube. I don't even mess with that on this new show. Rockfin, Rumble, BitChute, Odyssey, you know, Gab TV, like whatever, Float. Like if you're trying to get to all these platforms, that's a full-time job right there. Just uploading to all these platforms, you know? So basically what Content Safe does, it's like, if you're a podcaster, you have services like Podbean or Podomatic or Anchor or whatever it is, where you upload your MP3 file to that site. And then that site distributes it out to each one of the different, you know, iTunes, Spotify, all that stuff. So Content Safe provides that service for you, for your video. So basically, like, I would upload to Rockfin and he would scrape the Rockfin video and then distribute it out to BitChute and Odyssey, Rumble, Float.
Nice.
Bam. You know, so that just saves you so much work. So definitely recommend getting in touch with Matt about that, because that's been an absolute lifesaver for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a shame too, the technology side. I was just talking to Sean Atwood actually earlier today about the Elon Musk purchase and free speech and what that means and where that could go. And it's been such a disgusting thing to watch these social media platforms just arbitrarily decide who is worthy to, you know, who is talking about the truth and who is talking about these conspiracy theories, you know. And it would be one thing if it was just real clear cut, this is truth and this is the lie. The problem is that as we've all seen, is that we post something today, they deem it to be fake news, and then 6 months from now the real mainstream news is reporting it as fact. And yeah, we were right all along.
We call that rebunked. We call that rebunked.
There you go. Yeah. It's rebunked.
It's been rebunked. It was debunked, and now it's being reported as true. So we call that rebunked around here.
Which is a great way to segue into your show, Rebunked.
Oh, there you go.
Where are we going with rebunked? Because Truthzilla got you on the map, and rebunked is going to put you in a different stratosphere here, I think, because you've got some real allies in this in the alternative media that love what you're doing and love the message that you're sending out there. What's going on with Rebunked?
Well, you know, that was kind of the premise. You know, here's the thing, is I left Truthzilla and I'm like, you know, for a minute there, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to continue on, like maybe I'm just going to fade off into the sunset. Like, I don't know, you know, but then I was like, no, I can't, I have to get right back in the ring. And honestly, for a minute there, I was thinking like, maybe I'll just do like a mainstream show, just like, you know, a normie show, just like get on YouTube and just like not to worry about, you know, my idea originally was like do like a show about recovery, you know, cause I'm a person who's in recovery from substance use for many, many years. And, you know, I've done it professionally for many years as a counselor, and, you know, I'll just do a show about recovery. Right. You know, just something just mainstream, you know what I mean?
Right.
But then I was like, no, who are you kidding? Come on. What are you thinking? Like, nope, got to get right back in the ring. And so, but then I had the idea of like, okay, I can actually incorporate that into it, because, you know, there's this huge parallel I feel between, you know, addictions, recovery, maybe other forms of recovery, you know, like trauma, stuff like that. Like there's overlaps between that and waking up and getting red pilled, quote unquote. You know what I mean? There's so many different overlaps. And so I've done some episodes kind of exploring that, that overlap, but just the premise was really, you know, we're in this very interesting time where, like I said, you know, things that were being reported 2 years ago is just complete nonsense and complete conspiracy theory. Oh, that's been debunked, you know. Now it's all being reported as like, you know, mainstream truth, you know? And so that was where the title came from. And I don't want to necessarily lock myself into one like theme for the show, but you know, that's something that, definitely is a good launching off point for most conversations. You know what I mean? And yeah. there's some very interesting ones, just like the gaslighting nature of it. Like, you know, when you have like Lena Wynn going on whatever MSNBC saying things like, yeah, you know, well, one way masking is fine. Like you can just, as long as you have your mask on, it's fine. You don't need to worry about what other people are doing as far as masks go. And it's like, and they just say it so matter of factly, as if like, it's like, well, duh, didn't you know? Like the way that they just gaslight, it's just like, oh, you,
yeah. It's so frustrating. Yeah, frustrating. Everyone knows that my one hot button is the media.
Yep.
I just despise them. Hey, did you see CNN Plus's numbers?
No. What is it?
The CNN Plus announced that, now, mind you, their goal for America is 2 million subscribers paying $6 a month. So $12 million a month is what they're expecting to come in. 2 million is the goal. They have 10,000.
Yes. That is hilarious.
Done. They're done. They spent $250 million to launch and they have 10,000 subscribers.
Oh my gosh. That's insane.
It's a disaster.
Yeah. So,
but that's what you get. That's what you get when you have Lena Wynn on.
Yeah.
That's what you get when you have Fauci on. That's what you get when you have propagandists on posing as you know, you have intelligence agents, agency, you have Ken Delanian, who's works for the CIA on is on MSNBC talking about things. What do you think? What are we supposed to do? You think we're going to turn on the TV and just get lied to? And we know that they're lying to us. And then you want us to spend $6 more. Oh, and by the way, the 10,000 plus subscribers, they had to cut that $6 down to $3 to even get them.
Oh, that's insane. I mean, that's encouraging. You know, it's that you can't in like reality in nature, there's like hard truths. You know what I mean? There's like actual truth, you know, like I need oxygen to breathe or like, you know, there's just like hard truths, you know, and all of this stuff that's artificially being propped up with lies and deception. Like it just goes against nature. Like it is not sustainable. You cannot maintain this for any given time. And we're seeing it like they're trying their damnedest and they're crumbling under it because they're literally going against, you know, just the laws of this universe or this realm or whatever it is, but they're stupid crap, you know? And that's why our job, you know, literally all we have to do is just like rely on the truth as much as we possibly can. And it will withstand. It will withstand the test of time. It's like, I taught the most last episode I did was with Jim Bob, made by Jim Bob. I mean, everybody's probably seen his cartoons, right?
Yep.
And I asked him, I'm like, you know, what do you think it is about like, okay, so we're in this battle for the soul of humanity right now. And like, it's being waged with like cartoons and like meme. Like, what is that all about? Like, what the heck? Like, and his take on it is pretty spot on. It's just like, you know, the reason why memes are so effective is because, you know, the truth is generally really easy to distill down just to like a couple words or a very simple image or something that just resonates with you. And that's why they're so powerful and so effective. Whereas their propaganda relies on so much deception and how one lie has to rely on another lie. And it's just like this tangled web that literally cannot withstand it. Whereas the truth, literally, I can just put one word on a, like an orange ball on a meme and put it out there and give, tells you all that you need to know, you know?
The truth doesn't require any additional energy to survive, but these lies require constant maintenance. Yeah. They have to do it. That's why they say the left can't meme. That's because the left's, the hardcore left, their ideas are so inconsistent with reality and take so much explaining to get to the point that it doesn't work in a meme. The right, for, you know, for all their faults, which, you know, they're great at shit talking. They're great at memes. They're great at that stuff. And it's easy to poke fun at the hardcore left because they make themselves gigantic targets by being themselves. And that and that's the power of the memes, is that, like you said, it just doesn't, the truth is the truth, and it's easy, it's real easy to defend it, it's real easy to showcase it, it's just what it is, it is the truth. But these lies, these elaborate lies that require constant fiddling with, or constant Lena Wynn has to come on all the time, Anthony Fauci has to come on all the time, they have to support this, they have to reiterate their points, they of course they have to change their points too, because they're lying the whole time, so they have to come back in and restate things, doesn't work.
Yeah.
We there's something in our, oh, I don't know if it's our soul, I don't know if it's hardwired into us, that recognizes people that are inauthentic,
mm-hmm.
really, like they jump out at you, and maybe we needed that. Maybe we're dependent on that for our evolution to be as best as we can at recognizing fakeness when we see it, so that we don't, I don't know, eat the wrong plant or whatever, die. So, but we see fakeness in the media and we recognize it right away. That to me is one of the best, I think it's one of the best services that the alternative media has done, is we've been able to really try and, I don't know, I guess get people thinking about reexamining the relationship that they have with the media, looking again at who these people are. Let's think about, you know, who Rachel Maddow really is. Is she really telling you the truth, or, you know, she's a Rhodes Scholar, just like Bill Clinton and Chesa Bowden, the woke district attorney weirdo in San Francisco. And these people are currently wrecking the world. So maybe there's more to these people than just, you know, just a pretty face sitting there on your TV. So I feel like the alternative media has done a very good job of waking up the rest of us and saying, hey, look, these people are no good. You guys, I know you've done real great work at exposing this. I wonder what do you plan for Rebunked? Where are we going? Are you going to, I don't know, who's on your list of people that you want to get on? Because I'm excited to see. I was looking through all of the guests that you've had on so far, and it's a I like where you're going with it, man.
Yeah.
You've got some real subversives on there, some people that I really enjoy a lot. I wonder what your show looks like a year from now.
Gosh, I don't know, man. That's a great question. You know, I just want to speak to interesting people and people who have, you know, solutions, really. I think that's kind of my main concern right now, is to, you know, I really want to focus more on the idea of solutions. And like my personal home, like, you know, 5-year goal, I would say at this point, is to get some land, start homesteading, start a family. That's where I'm at right now. You know what I mean? Like, and so the solutions piece, whatever that looks like, you know, I want to just talk to people who are, you know, in the solution. Although at the same time, it's fun to, you know, talk about the madness of the world as well. But, you know, one of the things that, one of the big takeaways I had from, the conversation with Richard Gage was that like right now the world is ready for some like accountability for, you know, these people that pulled off this COVID thing, you know, like we're dying. Like there's all these, like Reiner Fulmick is doing the grand jury thing, you know, for COVID stuff. And it's like, you know, people are dying for some sort of government accountability, whatever that looks like, you know, so highlighting people that are kind of like working towards that maybe. But talking to Richard, you know, I asked him, like, you know, I'm like, you've been in the business of like trying to hold the government accountable for a long, long, long time. You know what I mean? Like this is, and so, you know, what can we do? What advice would you have for people who are like trying to now hold the government accountable for this stuff? And he said, just keep pushing, just keep getting information out there as much as you possibly can. You never know when that one thing is going to come out that's going to help take it to the next level. And he equivocated it to like, you know, pushing a boulder up a hill or up a mountain, and the boulder's so big, you don't know where the top of the mountain is, but you just keep pushing, you know? And so, you know, just trying to get as much truth out there, I feel, is a solution. You know, a lot of people kind of like say that, like, oh, you're just talking about all the problems and blah, blah, blah. But I feel like, you know, the more, like, we wouldn't be where we're at now if it wasn't for shows like yours and shows like all of ours, like putting this information out there and having like a, a place where people could go to access this information, you know? And I feel like the more nodes that are out there, the more people that start a podcast and people that are saying this stuff and shining the light in their little corner, the more people are going to awaken to it. So I think it's just as equally important to put that information out there, you know? I want to talk to more doctors, more scientists, like more, get more information as much as possible. And I want to produce, like I've got one little documentary I want to produce that I really feel strongly about, but I just, you know, it's been so crazy and busy that I haven't had time to do it. But the focus being like how this has had an impact on people who struggle with addiction, how the last couple of years have impacted us. Cause it's just, you know, it's been devastating.
I wanted to ask you that because your background in working with addiction, I'm not surprised that your show is focused on solutions.
Yeah.
That's what guys like you do is you provide solutions for people that have been using drugs and alcohol as the solution for their problems before. And that obviously doesn't work well, or maybe it works for a little bit, but there's a huge price to pay. And how has your background in recovery and dealing with addiction been able to make you, you know, it seems like it's a good fit for the podcast world too, because you're working around people that need help, come to you looking for help, and you're able to provide them with solutions for the problems that they're facing. And really, we in the podcast world are doing the same thing. People are kind of looking to us. I get emails all the time. How do I do this? How do I deal with this? I don't have a background in addiction management. You do. What's that overlap been between that world of solutions based for addiction problems and solutions based for podcasting topics?
Totally. You know, and it's also funny too, because there's so many podcast hosts that are in recovery as well. And I don't know why I haven't quite figured that out. You know what I mean? But I don't want to put anybody on the spot, but everyone knows there's several of them. It's weird. It's like half our community people are in recovery. But anyway, you know, some of the things that we talk about and some of the things that, you know, have helped people in recovery, like, you know, do, like I said, they overlap totally with what we're going through right now. One of the biggest ones for me is that the idea of like, you know, and like say you have a family member that's like, you know, just deep in their alcoholism or whatever, like there's nothing you can generally say to them that's going to convince them to get it, to wake up and stop drinking. Right. Mm-hmm. It's something that they have to realize on their own, you know? And so like kind of the principles that I've been taught is just like, you know, there's nothing I can do to convince somebody to stop using. They have to just reach that decision on their own, which usually means hitting the bottom. And so like, I can kind of look at that in my life. Like I can't go out there and just wake people up. Like there's nothing I can say to a person who's completely bought into the narrative to get them to wake up. You know, they have to come to that decision on their own. And it usually has to be like a rock bottom type scenario. So, you know, I can kind of detach and not like really feel like I need to go around saving people. You know what I mean? Like, it's like the information's here when you're ready, but, you know, I can't, there's nothing really I can do for you. One of the other principles that we really talk about is like, you can only keep what you have by giving it away. You know what I mean? So that's a very deep recovery principle. Yeah. Like I am able to maintain my sobriety and all that by going and helping out the newcomer. Like when I go to like a meeting or whatever, like the new people, like they're the most important people there. Like I have to, like, it's my duty to like reach out and make them feel welcome, make them feel like they're, you know, a part of this thing. And because somebody did that to me when I first got there, and, you know, and that's why I stuck around. And so making them feel valued and helping, you know, guide them along, that's a huge piece. And so, you know, that goes with this too, like with the podcast. Like, I'm just saying like, hey, here's this information. Like, I'm glad you guys are here. Like, welcome to the party. Like, if this is your first time listening to a podcast of this nature, like, holy crap, I'm glad you're here. You're the most important person here. Yeah.
It's your first night here. You've got to fight.
Yeah, totally.
The fight
totally.
Club of the alternative media. It's really there are some parallels there, because we are talking about getting people that are, you know, that come to this meeting, being our podcast too, where they come to this meeting and they're unsure if these are their people, or they're unsure if they should stay. They're going to hear some things that are kind of scary. I can understand how I can see the similarities there between these two different industries. Yeah. How long has your recovery process been so far?
I'll have 6 years later this year. So. Nice.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you. it's a beast, man. It's a slippery motherfucker. It sneaks up on you, and I've watched it take some friends, and even if it didn't get them,
yeah,
the thinking, their mentality changed in a way that put them down a path that was really destructive. So anytime people can find a reason to get out of that, it's then go for it. But these days, the last 2 years that we've been going through this, we've seen addiction go through the roof. We've seen mental health crises go through the roof. What have you been seeing on your end with people that are struggling based on the lockdowns or just the lockdown mentality?
Yeah. It's just been absolutely devastating in so many different ways. You know, I can say my perspective from both a person who's like in the recovery community, which is like, you know, it's just like a community that we have, you know, like a peer group of people who are, you know, in a position to mutually support each other through these hard times. You know, traditionally, but I can also speak from it from like a clinical perspective, having worked like in the addictions field, you know, and doing counseling for the last several years as well. I've seen the before and after of how this whole thing has impacted both communities. And it's just really sad to say that, you know, here in Oregon, when the whole lockdowns descended upon us, like they pretty much shut all the meetings down. And it just like, so there was a group of people, you know, a lot of us were just meeting in the park, you know, we would just go to the park, do a meeting, you know what I mean? But the people who were like in charge of the, cause like our little recovery community, like basically there's like a board, you know, there's like a chairperson and a secretary, people who are like in charge of like the administrative aspects of running a community of different meetings throughout, you know, it's decentralized, but there's also like a board of people who kind of like are in charge of that sort of stuff. And I was one of the people on that board. I was actually on that board. I had a service position on that board, but I was the only one who was like, you guys, the most important thing is to continue to do meetings. Everybody else was just like, no, 100%. We have to shut everything down and blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? And it was like literally a battle for like 2 years. Like they were trying to, we still kept going with like our campouts and our picnics and stuff, like much to their, they were very upset that this was still going on. You know what I mean? It was like, but it was so crazy, but it's just like, just the fracturing of like, and a lot of these folks, like I considered like family before all this. And now all of a sudden we're just like they hate me. Like they just like, it's just like, it created this huge rift. And that's like one of the reasons why I'm moving is because, you know, that's such an important thing for me to have is like this strong, tight knit recovery community. I want to go to a place that wasn't as impacted as this region was here. You know, I want to go to a place where their recovery community wasn't ripped apart and fractured. And it's just like all this animosity everywhere. It's like, that's just, it's just horrible. It's just absolutely.
Recovery's tough enough. You don't need that thrown on top of it. I mean, that you've got temptations and you've got just human nature and all of this. And then you add, if you add the stress, and obviously stress is a huge trigger, but the stress of somebody giving you a hard time for not buying this narrative. I mean, what did we do a statistical analysis of the 99.98% survivability from this one thing that you're supposed to be scared of? I don't know what the number is for relapse, but something tells me it's a pretty high number, especially compared to 0.02% chance of anything really bad happening to you from COVID. Something tells me that the chances of relapsing is many multiples higher than 0.02%.
Yeah. And it's just insane, man. Like I personally know people that have overdosed and died. I know people that have committed suicide, people that I knew, you know, this last couple of years, it's just been absolutely devastating. A lot of people who had lots of sobriety that ended up going back out and who knows where they're at now, you know, people that I've known for a long time, you know, weren't able to withstand, they weren't able to take it. For someone who suffers with addiction, the last couple of years have been the worst recipe for disaster in terms of like, you know, they're telling you to go isolate, like being around other people is bad. It's just this constant just onslaught of fear, which is like a recipe for disaster. And then like all these stimulus checks that people are getting, you know what I mean? It's just like, it was madness. It was madness. And then, so that's kind of like the community perspective. And then like from a clinical perspective, of course, like it was just like, you know, lots of people, I would hear stories all the time about people that would just like, you know, cave in to the pressure and everything. And now they're, you know, they're seeking treatment after having had a very rough last couple of years. But, and then the agency I was working for, really bought into this narrative as well. You know, here in Oregon, they did institute the, you know, the mandated shots for anybody in a healthcare setting. And so my agency was considered healthcare. So I was let go after I kind of made my, it wasn't like a direct one-to-one, hey, you don't take the shot, you're fired. They came after me because I was pretty vocal in the workplace about it. And I was like trying to help other people with their religious exemptions and stuff like that. I didn't like that. And so they like came after me. I mean, on some bullshit. Yeah. Anyway, but, so there was all that, but, you know, it's crazy. So like here in Oregon, they have, and I've talked about this on the show, so if anybody's heard it, I apologize, but I never want to miss an opportunity to get this out there because, the organization I worked for called Willamette Family Treatment Services in Eugene, Oregon. All right. So they had Oregon Health Authority is, just insane. Like, I don't know who makes up this board of people. You know, it's like the classic, you know, how they keep showing those memes, like these are your health officials. It's like all these obese people. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that's Oregon Health Authority to a T. Exactly. Okay. So first of all, they're just insane, tyrannical, insane people. And they're the ones that are coming out with all of these guidelines around COVID saying, like, you know, you have to be like 6 feet apart. And like, if you're going to be playing in the park, make sure that you're not singing above. Like, if you're going to sing happy birthday, like, make sure you're singing it at a quiet volume. Like, they're the guys that are doing like those like classic, just,
right,
you know, the comedic like guidelines, like saying, yeah, if you're playing the park, don't run. Just make sure you're walking through like a play structure, just all this crazy shit, dude. They're so insane. They're the ones that are coming out with all the indoor mask policies and all this stuff. Now, Willamette Family Treatment Services in Eugene, Oregon made it so that they were not taking patients. They were not admitting patients to their inpatient residential program unless they had the shot. And to me, that is just like so over and above, beyond unacceptable, that I just, it was just like, I was like, almost like, really, you're kidding me? Like, these people, like, oh God. Anyway, so Oregon Health Authority had to step in and be like, yeah, I think you guys are actually taking it a little too far. You can't just deny people based on their vaccine status. And so like, and so they capitulated, but even this agency took it beyond what even the insane Oregon Health Authority was willing to do. And so I was just like, so good riddance. Ever since I've been free of that organization, you know, I've still been involved with the recovery community, so I've been able to help, but it's just like, it's such a tragedy, man. It's such a tragedy that, you know, going after someone like me who really genuinely cares about the well-being of like my clients and stuff like that. And it's just like, oh, really? You're going to, okay, fine, cool. You know, it's crazy.
They're exposing themselves. This is not about science. It's about compliance. It's not about doing what's right. It's about doing what we say. Yes. And people have been recognizing this. I think a larger segment is waking up, but you guys got hit really bad. I mean, Oregon, Portland is unrecognizable. Seattle, San Francisco, these larger size cities that, you know, hold themselves out as these paragons of like, of acceptance and love, and we're on the left, and we're inclusive, and we're equal, and we're all equal, and I don't care what color you are, you're welcome in this, but if you don't take that fucking shot, mm-hmm, you get out of here, you're gonna kill everybody, you probably love Trump. Yeah. You know, and all, I watched the most disgusting things happen by the people that hold themselves out to be supposedly inclusive. They seem like the least inclusive people. Not that I would want to be included in their reindeer games and whatever nonsense they're working on, but you would at least think that if you're going to call yourself an inclusive organization, you would, be inclusive of people, especially the marginalized. I would think, it's not happening, obviously, but I would think there would have been a great opportunity for the everybody is equal crowd to have adopted the people that were against the vaccine. They would have, they could have said, hey, you guys are being marginalized now by the establishment, like we've been marginalized. Come join in us. They didn't do that. They said, you guys get out of here. You're dirtier. You're on the bottom. You're beneath us. So they're a bunch of hypocrites as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I had Matt Baker on, who's people would recognize him. He's the guy that like tore up the San Diego City Council, like dreadlocks, green shirt. You guys probably recognize him. His video went super viral, but I had him on the show and he made this great observation saying that, okay, so if the media is smearing all of us for being like white supremacists, right? Like, if you really want to be inclusive, you should probably become a white supremacist, because technically, you know, the left or these Antifa folks, they're very homogenized. It's just a bunch of white people. But if you come over here to the dissident group, the people that they're calling white supremacists, it's like this huge collection. It's every race, color, creed, sexuality, gender. It's beautiful. It's perfect. So if you really want to become completely inclusive, you should come become a white supremacist with the rest of us. It's great. Like, you don't have to like burn a cross in anybody's lawn right away. You don't have to go right there. Like, literally all you have to do is just disagree with what the New York Times says and you're in. It's good.
You and I are two of the whitest white guys in the world. I can't speak for you, but I've never come across Klan rallies or Aryan Nation stuff. I've never been recruited. I even have the shaved head. You'd think I'd be a major candidate for this. I'm disappointed.
I know.
I'm a bit disappointed. I feel like we should be, between you and me, we should be like a high draft pick of white nationalists. And yet here we are. Nobody from their side even wants to talk to us.
I know. It's insane. It's insane. Like, yeah, you're completely right. So I don't know, man. It's crazy. But you're completely right.
Where do you see this woke stuff going? You think that is it so ridiculous and stupid on its face that it will eventually fizzle out? Or is it the beginning of cultural Marxism, where it is used to transform society, and eventually my 10-year-old daughter is going to try to get me to have pronouns in my bio?
That's a good question. We're at this very interesting point where it could go either way at this point. I feel that, you know, it's the classic saying, like, go woke, go broke type of thing. Like, I feel it's not profitable. Nobody cares. Like, anybody, like, I feel like the only reason why people would even like go to any sort of like mainstream entertainment is just maybe one, they don't know that anything outside of it exists, but also at the same time, like, they just want to fit in. And I think that's what it comes down to, is the idea of just wanting to fit in. And in fact, that reminds me, because like, you know, I think, again, Adam and Deborah Gets Red Pilled, you know, that show is such a good microcosm of like what it is we're dealing with. And
great show, by the way, for those who don't know, Deborah Gets Red Pilled is a podcast with Adam and his mother-in-law, Deborah. And his mother-in-law I've been on the show a couple times. And in fact, I'm scheduled to go on a third time. His mother-in-law, Deborah, is the sweetest. She's just, I just want to hug her every time I see her. She's so nice. But she's a normie. And Adam brings these people on that explain complicated subjects about what's happening to her. And you can watch, like, her demeanor at the beginning is she's upright, and by the end she's just kind of like slouch. She's just like, oh God, you know, like, is this true? I remember we got done recording one of the times, and I was like, Deborah, I just have to apologize. I feel so bad. I feel like I broke your brain. She's like, it's okay.
One of the episodes you did with her in particular is one of the best examples of that. Just like, wow. I can't remember which one it was, but I remember listening to that one. I was like damn. But yeah, no, so much love and respect for Deborah. You know, she's a great sport. You know, she's like an icon. Like, she's such a powerful, like, archetype for what it is what we have hope for. Like, we all have Deborahs in our family, but we don't all have the type of Deborahs who are willing to actually open their minds to what's going on. But there was an episode, it was fairly within the last maybe 6 months or so, where, you know, Adam really got to the bottom of like kind of what this is that we're dealing with. Like, you know, to me, it seems like, okay, if you, Like we feel like we can just like text a news article to one of our normie family members, and like they'll all of a sudden be like, oh yeah, there is a whole deep state. Oh yeah. Okay. Like we have this, like, they're gonna have an epiphany because of an article we text them or something like that. Right. But when you look at something like an experiment, like Deborah Gets Red Pilled, like, you can literally sit them down for 100 episodes in a row with experts from all over the world presenting very, you know, valid information, and still they're not quite there yet. So that's like, wow. Well, if that's the case, then what the hell are we supposed to do? You know, but you know, there was one episode where we really got to the bottom of it. And it seems like Deborah kind of admitted, she's like, it's not so much that I fully reject this information. It's more that I don't want my friends to think that I feel this way. So it's like a social, it's like a social thing. It's like literally like a, like almost like a codependency type thing.
Yeah. What will the neighbors think? If they find out that I'm so straight laced and I'm a good person. And you know, what's interesting is that one of the things that the normies will find out about the conspiracy theory community is that we're nice people too.
Yeah.
We're nice, logical, we want what's best for our families and for our friends and for even for strangers that we don't know. We want what's best. We're not coming at this from a place of trying to destroy the system just for the sake of destroying the system. We're talking about destroying the system because it's deeply evil. And here are the examples, and here's all of the reasoning behind it. And in the end, I just want a better world for everybody. And I think that once people see that, or they get the idea that we're all Alex Joneses ranting and raving, and I think Alex wants what's best for the world too. But there's this perception that there's a screw loose. And if you believe the things that we believe, then by default, there has to be a screw loose with you too, because it's obvious to everybody that 2 + 2 = 5. Everybody knows that, you know, and in the normie world, it's like that. To pull away is an act of bravery, and not everybody is really cut out for it.
Yeah, exactly. And so like, to answer your question about like when this woke, like if this woke thing will end, and I think it will only be as a result of people like stopping caring what other people think. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's what differentiates a lot of us from, you know, a lot of maybe the normies. You know, it's just like, I've long since abandoned any care about what other people think about how I perceive the world. You know what I mean? And in fact, I'm invigorated by, you know, being the one that sticks out like a sore thumb and just a big, like the only one in an entire store without a mask on. All these people are looking at me like, rrr. I was like, yes, that feels good.
Dude, you literally have a bullhorn. Yeah. Of course you love that.
so, you know, until everybody gets a bullhorn and starts like, you know, blasting, you know, then I don't know. But I feel like, you know, that's what it is. It's like people just care too much about what other people think. And until that paradigm shifts, like we're probably going to be stuck with some woke stuff for a while. But you know, in the meantime, it's also, see, that's the beautiful thing about this whole agenda, this whole PSYOP, the last 2 years, is just like the more darkness and evil that they pump into the world, the more light that's shining over on this side, you know? So they're, I've never thrived more than I ever have in my whole life this last couple of years. You know what I mean? I've never, like, I'm in a place now where I would not go back and change any of it. I wouldn't, like, fine. Yeah, let's do this. Like, it has awakened so many people, and it's just this weird paradox. Yes, it's horrible and evil. And, you know, there's obviously some fear about where we're headed, but at the same time, now I know what I need to do. And I know what I need to do in my own little world. I can never take down the government. I'm never going to, like, we're not going to shoot our way out of this situation. We're not going to, like, go to the courts and fix any of this stuff, but we can be over here. We can build our own, whatever it is. And that goes as far as like music and entertainment. You know, we can build our own alternatives, you know, that are way better, way, way, way better, you know? And so that gives me a lot of hope. So let them do their woke crap. Like, you know, like just the thought popped in my head while we were talking, like, you know, people who like go watch like sitcoms on NBC, like, is that even such a thing anymore still? Like, do they even have like sitcoms? Like, and I can't even imagine how just unbelievably awful that they would be. You know what I mean? Like, oh my God, like whoever's watching that, like, oof, no, we're over here. We're going to build something way better, way more meaningful. And eventually, as their CNNs and all their institutions collapse, we're going to have this awesome thing over here just being like, hey, come on over here, guys. This is way better anyway.
That's Scott Armstrong. He is the host of Rebunked. Where's the best place for people to find you and your show?
Main video platform is on Rockfin, on all podcast players. If you go to rebunk.news, you can find links to all the stuff, all the social media and everything. So
if you are listening to this as an audio podcast, by the time when you get done listening to this episode, I want you to go into your player, look up Rebunked, subscribe to it, start downloading it, get on board with this. Scott, you're the best. Thank you so much for everything that you do. You literally put your money where your mouth is. You put your actions out there. You're an inspiration to everyone. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Carly, thank you, man. Such an honor, such a pleasure. And thank you for all your work over the years. It's been a real inspiration for me, so I appreciate it.
Thank you. And if you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. The website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com, on Twitter, @macroaggressions. I will talk to you all soon.